Okay, now we're talking, people. It is really happening now. Welcome to Into the Garden with Leslie. I'm Leslie Harris, and you probably know that one of the great harbingers of real spring is that one of the great harbingers of fake early spring, that season otherwise known as winter to non-gardeners. Anyway, we're talking about hellebores. Well, you know real spring is happening when hellebores have made space on the stage for so many supporting cast members that they themselves are in danger of losing top billing. And that is what is happening, although they still look great. Hellebore flowers are now just faces in the crowd. We're talking red buds, cherry blossoms, leucojum, moving toward late daffodils, all kinds of tulips, and even a few hosta tips are poking up in my bowling alley garden. And I'm very pleased to see that because you might recall that I mulched them with turned over sod. That was an experiment that I wasn't sure would work, but they're coming and it's all happening. And not only are the blooms coming out, but you may be coming out and deciding that you need to run yet another errand in the direction of any likely purveyor of plants. It's true, you might have laundry detergent to last for the next 6 months, but hey, that stuff doesn't go bad. And right next door to where you can get laundry detergent, they might have a fabulous collection of pansies. So off you go. It's the time of year when we gardeners let local nurseries get in touch with our inner wallets. And I'm here to help because my guest on the show today is somebody who's going to explain to us some of the best plants that we might be able to find in nurseries this year. Now, best new plants doesn't mean that these new plants are likely falling off the shelves wherever you go, but at least one of the purveyors of these plants on this list has a website. And if you know where to look for great plants, even in future years, it's just really fun to get those creative juices flowing in terms of, yeah, I don't need that plant, but how clever would it be to put it right over there where I wasn't even thinking about putting a plant before, or where I have two or three other really boring plants. We may admire the creativity of garden designers and the mastery of our green-fingered friends, but let's be real. You know and I know that where the real expertise lies is bringing home plants that really couldn't possibly fit in your garden, and yet you make it happen because you are a magical garden creature. So back to my guest. It's Katie Dubow, and she's the president of the Garden Media Group. And what we're going to do today is go over a list of their most fabulous plants for 2024. I dare you to not listen to this interview. How could you ignore these plants? They are wonderful. So no plant of the week this week, because people, we've got a dozen plants of the week this week. And you're going to learn about them right now.
So we are back with Katie Dubow, who knows a whole lot more about the industry, the green industry, than I do, because she actually works for the Garden Media Group. And, you know, you listeners, you know that I'm just out there sort of digging in the dirt. I only have a vague idea about these organizations, but I know they're wonderful. And I know that they can inform us about great plants that are coming out. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So welcome, Katie. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, Leslie.
No, I'm very glad. And I first want to explain, well, I can't, so you will. What is it that you do and the organization that you work for?
Yes. So my company is called Garden Media Group, and we are actually celebrating 36 years this year. Ooh. I took over from my mom in 2020. She started it, Susie McCoy. And I was actually just telling somebody this story yesterday, how it shifted my view growing up. Obviously, I was in the industry, but did not ever think I would be in gardening. I majored in sports broadcasting, if you can believe it.
Oh.
Back to take over for my mom. And it was then that I learned, and since then, since she retired in 2020, learned how groundbreaking being a woman starting this business 36 years ago, doing public relations and marketing for the horticulture industry specifically. So then people are like, what? I still don't get it. I tell my friends, we make plants popular. So, you know, our clients, us, or products, or even services. People come to us to try to reach their customer and let their customers know about the great things that they do in the garden industry.
All right. So that's a great answer. But then how do you choose? Because all kinds of people are breeding all kinds of new plants. And our list is for today. I mean, maybe we can go on and on and on. But what you sent me is just, what I don't know, is it 10 plants? Is it 8? It's not that many plants, right?
I know. So our clients, we do a trends report too. So Garden Media Group produces a trends report, which we're working on 2025, which will be our 23rd annual garden trends report.
Wow.
We help not just our clients, but the industry see is what customers are going to want. For example, back in the early 2000s, we talked about native plants and American Beauty's native plants, which I know you're aware of, was a client of ours. We love the brand and we helped launch that brand. And so we also helped launch the idea of the front yard vegetable garden. So there are these things that, you know, we did not necessarily create, but we saw our clients were creating products and we helped them see what the trends were in consumer behavior. Small space gardening, you know, that is something that you have to create plants that are suited for those spaces.
Right.
So it's not just any plant that's going to work in a container, as you know. So some of the plants that are not just the best plants out there, but the plants that are best suited to what people are looking for right now.
Okay, that's a great answer. And there's some great ones on this list too. Now, so you listened to the podcast that I did with Aaron Shannon a few weeks ago, and I accidentally gave that password over to Marianne Wilburn and she busted right in on us. That was totally unplanned. Kidding. I wanted her to talk about tropical plants because that's a real area of expertise for her. So I had real fun batting around ideas with them. As Aaron pointed out, it's hard to make those trend lists. I mean, you've got to not be redundant. You want it to be exciting. You want it to be accurate. It must be extremely difficult. So let us in a little bit on how you guys do that.
Tell me about it. I feel like a broken record when we do we just had our first trends meeting last week for 2025. And I try to bite my tongue and say, we've done that. We've done that. We've done that. We've done that. Because there are things, you know, it's a difference between a trend or a shift and a movement, like the pollinators. We cannot say that they're trends anymore, but there are still new things happening in that movement. And so we want to address those in our trends. And so this year we talked about, actually, it was called bugging out, and it was the trend of interiors, people using bug motifs on their mugs and in rugs.
Oh.
So it was like that. And not only were they motifs, but they were not the Honey Nut Cheerios bee, you know, they were actually real intricate representations of those species. And they were moths and they were beetles and they weren't monarchs, which we love our monarchs, but
sure,
you know, to see the shift in that trend and to see now people are understanding and accepting pollinators, not just outside. Yes, some people might still scream when they see a bee, but you know, they're bringing them indoors. So we try to see what's happening that's different in those shifts because we still want to talk about them. And then the age old, like, how do we come up with new trends? And we rely on lots of different trusted sources, talking to people like you and just then connecting the dots.
Right.
So it's different things that people are saying. It might just be in passing, I noticed that more people are buying herbs this year. And you just say it in passing. And then we see a garden center tells us that per square foot, I'm giving you a little hint into 2025, by the way, but per square foot, herbs are selling better than anything else in their store.
Wow.
I'm seeing it in my friends. I'm seeing it on social media. Fewer people are drinking alcohol. So, okay. So let's connect some of these dots as to what's happening out there or what as an industry could we push people along? Can you make your own, you know, lavender lemonade at home, basil lavender lemonade? So we can help people continue to push what's selling slightly better maybe than others and tie it with what's happening in kind of society.
Great. I love to hear about it. And the bugs thing is so nice because something in us is geared toward not liking those things. And yet we cannot live without those things.
No.
So even just to have a little representation of a beetle on a mug, I think is helpful. So there, it's not just like, oh God, run away. That's one of those.
Yeah. I just had 5 girls have a sleepover here at my house last night. And 2 of them are mine, 3 of them are not. And you would think that the house was collapsing when they saw a spider. And so it's like, we can be calm. Let's learn how this, we do not need to be afraid of the spider. You are 1,000% bigger than him. So breathe. Let's shuffle him that way. And so it's just about teaching those behavioral shifts, I think, at a younger age. And those kinds of things help for sure.
I think they do too. Were your girls just like, dude, what? It's a spider. I mean, let's get a Kleenex and get him outside where he needs to be.
Yes, they're along for the ride here with our pollinator friends.
Yeah, my granddaughter got her hands on a dead chipmunk about a year ago. She's about 5 at the time.
And she knew that it was something good.
Yeah.
She wasn't quite sure that it was dead. It seemed a little stiff. Rigor mortis had set in. And she brought it to her mother, who happened to just be in the mood to video it. And she's like, oh, but it's a quiche. It's a very important quiche. And Jennifer's saying, put it down and we will now wash your hands. Put it down. Jennifer had a really good point on that one. And I'm glad she made her wash her hands. But I'm hopeful also that those kids are, you know, getting, yeah, bugs are, when I go to visit my grandchildren, I'm like, let's go look for bugs. Let's go see what they're doing. Let's look under this rock. Maybe we'll find something cool. I don't know what they are. Let's go look. So I think the more bugs, the better.
Yeah.
All right. So how do you want to begin with this? Just go through the list of plants, because you have some wonderful questions that I love it when my interviewees tee me up, like, ask me this. I'm looking at this great list, but still, should we just begin with the plants? Because they are very cool.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, I'm pulling up my list. First of all, she sent me this beautiful PDF, and I know that these photographs are made for, they want to get, you know, these plants bought, but still the colors that are popping out on this thing are just amazing.
On that note, bright bold colors to us. In our trend report this year, we picked cyber lime, like a bright neon green, as our color of the year. Of course, Pantone does their own thing. But it was really interesting to see the juxtaposition of their peach, you know, very cottage garden, kind of old fashioned color versus the cyber lime that we picked. And it's like, what's more of these bright colors being released this year for this year in the garden than the cottage? And I'm wondering what you're seeing, Leslie. Like, do you see that there's more, or you're like, I don't follow trends. So I don't know.
But I definitely don't follow trends. I post things on Instagram and then run away. Unless I'm called out on something, I don't. And, you know, just personally, and my listeners know that I moved about 6 months ago. So I've inherited this tiny little garden, and it's just a matter of right now I'm just over the hauling gravel to get rid of a lawn thing. So no, yeah. I don't. However, I'm fully tracking that I love soft colors, and there are a few on this, but there are some very vivid pinks and purples also. So let's talk about this gorgeous rose, which is a really beautiful peach, Champagne Dreams.
Oh, love Champagne Dreams. So this is from Jackson and Perkins. You probably have heard of them. They've been around since the 1800s, and they are a rose breeder. They were a rose breeder, and then they sort of got out of the game. And so this year, they are getting back in the game of finding roses that either, there are a couple different varieties that they're looking for. One is roses that they're calling from the vault. So these were roses that were once bred, famous roses that kind of just fell out of the breeding purposes. And so they're bringing those back. They're finding them in people's gardens and like really cool places. And then they're also launching an exclusive line. So they haven't done this in decades, where they are actually bringing roses maybe from Europe, wherever they're coming from. And the Champagne Dreams falls under that. And it's perfect to start with this one because it really is in that peach Pantone color of the year colorway. And it's just one of those beautiful Floribunda roses that is brand new, exclusive to Jackson and Perkins. And it is going to bloom, you know, those big, furry, almost like peony style flowers.
Ooh.
That they have one, like kind of a long stem. They're 4 inches wide and moderate, slight fruity fragrance. So if you don't want a super fragrant rose, this is one for you.
It just looks beautiful and very cuttable. And because it's a brand new one, you know, it's funny when you talk about going back to find roses from in the vault. Well, in the vault might not have those wonderful things that are going on right now in rose breeding, such as, you know, just protecting us from all kinds of diseases and bugs and mildew and black spot and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, most of us these days know that we don't want to pull out some chemical to combat against those things. We'd rather just grow the stronger plant. So this being a new breed probably has all that somewhat built in.
Absolutely. Highly disease resistant. So I agree with you. I do not want to be spraying anything in my garden. And I've taken out some older roses because of that. Like, you know, and because it's too hard. There's some things that I will work for, but it's like not for these roses. So yes, disease resistance, certainly in the Champagne Dreams.
That's awesome. And, you know, when I was first gardening, my listeners have heard this, I was absolutely just by default, not going to use that stuff because I just had a limited budget. I'm like, I'm not buying that stuff. I'm buying the plants. And so, and the ease of not using it. And then, of course, the much bigger thing of not putting those chemicals in, you know, in the air, on the plant, and the ground, wherever they're going to end up. So good. Champagne dreams. And listener, you might be ready for me to say, and now you'll find a link to all these plants in the show notes on lhgardens.com. But I have gotten so lazy about writing that blog that you might need to just you might need to find other links. I'll figure it out. I'll get the information to you. But don't forget, on a podcast, you can always rewind. Champagne dreams. Okay, next one. Easy beezy knockout. And we love knockouts. They are just so cheerful. And talk about easy. Has this one been made easier somehow?
Well, it's a new color, but okay. Guess when, how long do you think the knockouts have been? Like, what year do you think they're celebrating?
Yeah, so I used those back in my old Connecticut house. And I got one that got to the size of a VW bus. It was robust. It was awesome. Not a bus, a VW bug, let's say.
Yeah.
So I figure those probably came out in the late aughts, 2005, 6, 7, 8, something like that.
Close. They are going to be, next year is 25.
Okay. Yeah.
It came out in the year 2000. So I feel like, to me, time has flown. You know, I didn't have my own garden back then. So that's a good way to, you know, say, okay, when was I planting them? They're celebrating 25 years next
Long
year,
time.
Which is so cool. And they're still coming out with brand new stuff. Last year, Petite Knockout, if you heard of that one, it was like a little mini one that only grows to be about 18 inches tall.
Oh, nice.
Perfect for borders. But this year, they came out with new colorways. And so the two new knockouts this year are called Easy Beezy, and it's bright yellow. Mm-hmm. So they had one that was called Sunny that listeners might know. A little more in the white colorway, not as much in the yellow. This one is, it's a single petal. So you might also know of your double knockout, single petal, but bright yellow. And, you know, knockouts are, we talk about native plants versus pollinator plants, because there is a difference, right? Not all pollinator plants are natives. So they do want people to know this is a pollinator plant because of its single feature petals. The doubles, harder for those insects to get to. And so they have noticed these are just covered in pollinators. So it's great too, because these bloom, knockouts bloom their heads off. They're like the traditional ones. Late spring, mine here in Pennsylvania are starting like full on flushed out with leaves at this point. And then they bloom all the way to a frost.
Which is crazy, isn't it? I mean, when I lived in Connecticut, I remember not seeing any leaves on any roses until May. That was an extreme winter, but it was always mid to late April.
Yeah.
And there you are. What zone are you in?
Well, new zone. I mean, we're like 7A, 6B.
Okay. All right. I've gone down to 7B. And where I'm gardening, I think I might be kind of an 8. I'm trying all kinds of things. Yeah, it's I've got a retaining wall. I've got bricks. We'll see. It's all so new. All right. I see a variegated azalea next, and it's just beautiful. And when I glanced at it, I thought, oh, I don't know what that is, because the azalea leaf variegation throws you off. And I'm like,
yes.
Is that some sort of gardenia? I don't know. It's a gorgeous shape to the white flower. Tell us about Autumn Moonstruck.
Yeah. So also something, I don't know if you did grow many azaleas in Connecticut, but I don't grow a ton of them because of my zone. So this Autumn Moonstruck is zone 7 to 10, but Buddy Lee, who is the famed Encore azalea breeder, and I just love Buddy's story. He was a night nurse and just kind of dabbled on the side in azaleas and brought it to the plant development services people. And they created this Encore azalea line. And now there's 100 in the collection.
100? That's crazy. Now, do you know when Encore started? So we know Knockout started a quarter century ago. What do you have a rough date on? Because I feel like they've been around for a bit now too.
So Encore azaleas have been under development since the early 1980s.
Wow, that's a long time. That's a long time. That's very
a
cool.
Long time, yeah. And Buddy Lee has been, he is still involved. He's still breeding new ones, and he's still just as passionate about it to hear him talk about it. And they're also, they're called Encore, but they all have the name Autumn in front of them, because it helps people understand if they don't get that Encore name, it means they bloom in the spring and in the fall. So it's that Autumn, that's what the name means. So the Moonstruck, when you see the variety name after Autumn, that's when you know, okay, this is the variety. So Moonstruck is both in the white flower, crisp, beautiful white flower. But as you said, the really standout unusual thing here is it's stable variegated foliage, because they have had some azaleas that have had variegated foliage, but then it reverts back to just plain beautiful glossy green. But this one, we call it gold. You know, it's like flecked with this beautiful bright yellow color, and it's just very unusual to see. So it's fun to have in the garden because, like you said, people look at it when it is in the summer, just a foliage plant, and it's now even a more beautiful foliage.
And this grows to 4 feet wide by 5 feet tall, so it's a good sized plant. You know, it's funny, in some garden settings, and that maybe this is just me being an old person, you kids get off of my lawn. If I'm in not a great mood and I see an encore azalea in September, October, I'm like, well, that's just incongruous. That's not right. That's not supposed to be happening now.
Yeah.
But I mean, I could always look at this. This is a beautiful, beautiful flower.
Yeah.
And, you know, the variegation with the gold will speak more toward autumn. It'll let it make it seem more, I don't know, at home maybe. It's very cool.
Right. And the white color too. So it's not a bright pink, for example, in fall.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a little incongruous.
Yeah.
All right. So another rose, we've got the English coral, which is a grandiflora. Tell us about that.
So the English floral is another Jackson and Perkins rose that falls under that exclusive introduction. So brand new to Jackson and Perkins, more of that rose breeding that they're out there looking for new roses to bring to market. It is, I mean, coral, but it's hard to say. It's almost a Barbie coral, you know, it's not on the red hue coral, it's on that pink side where maybe it's, you know, kind of raw salmon, just absolutely beautiful, bright summer color. And it is one of those roses that also is perfect for cutting and has another slightly fruity fragrance here where we're looking at, like we said, with Champagne Dreams, it is bred here for disease resistant. So you know that you're getting something that you don't have to spray, that you're not going to have to be spending a lot of attention on caring for, as long as you put it in that sunny spot that roses want.
You know, I'm just looking at this PDF that you sent me and taking away all the other plants. I wonder what they would look like together, those two, Champagne Dreams and English Coral. I mean, you wouldn't say, you know, that it's a natural to put pink and orange together, but this is kind of not a pink and that is kind of not an orange. It's kind of, that might be an interesting combination.
That would be really beautiful.
Yeah, because they're both quite soft colors. But the next one is not soft. We got Orange Glow Knockout. It's more rah-rah team that has orange in its banner.
Yeah, yeah. So now we talked about knockouts already, but Orange Glow is another new one like Easy Beasy, where same great qualities of the knockout, disease resistant, blooms its head off, but it's orange. So this is like unheard of. I know that they've had other colors they've called peach before, which are kind of pink with a yellow center. This one really is an orange bloom that has a hint kind of a coral in it and yellow on the petals. It also is going to be a standout performer on the West Coast. Some of the previous knockouts didn't perform as well on the West Coast. So
why would a plant do better on the West Coast than the East Coast?
Because they say it's because of their rust resistance.
All right. I didn't know that was a problem out there because I have never gardened out there. It's really pretty and not a huge fan of orange in the garden, but it gets softer at the middle of the petals as they're younger, kind of have a frosty orange, I don't know, popsicle-y look. It's very pretty. You know, when I first started working as a gardener, I worked for a woman. I was still teaching high school Spanish up in Greenwich, Connecticut, but in the afternoons and on Saturdays, I worked for a woman who ran a business similar to the one that I started down here in Charlottesville, which I have since retired from. Anyway, she taught me the magic of pruning knockout roses. Now, I'm pretty sure you can prune knockout roses with a chainsaw and you're going to be fine. But the idea that you don't have to, you know, go down to that next node and, you know, so carefully find that place, you just kind of snip them away. You can almost use hand shears and just go boop, boop, boop. And the next one's coming up right behind. Isn't that cool?
It's so cool. And the timing, I think that's what's so hard for a lot of our plants. I think that probably right now the biggest, most searched term is when do I prune my hydrangeas?
Yeah.
But it's like people are just so afraid of when to prune things. My friends are asking me all the time, like, my hydrangea didn't bloom. My roses didn't bloom. I'm like, well, when did you cut them? I have a friend who just texted me last week. He was like, is it cool that I prune my forsythia now? And I was like,
perfect.
No,
if you like green sticks, you're good.
Right. So So, you know, you just don't realize if you're not a gardener, how important pruning is. But with a plant like Knockout, like you said, doesn't matter.
Yeah. And all he did was lose 1 year's worth of, I mean, that for sin. I know people who think they're going to kill a plant by pruning. I'm like, no. Unless you like attack something that maybe shouldn't be growing in your zone, like in December, you're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Poor gentleman. Well, he'll learn. You know, when you get to a level of gardening that I don't think is very advanced, but you have been doing it for years, you just take these things for granted. And I'm sure all my listeners are at least where we are, if not far beyond. So the next one's a boxwood. And so it's bred scientifically. And who's bred it? Better Boxwood. Okay. So that's the name of the breeder, Better Boxwood?
Yeah, Better Boxwood is a collection of disease resistant. So I don't know what your experience, if you've had boxwood like me that you have had to rip out because of blight.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody has. And so people from the Plant Development Services Incorporated who bring us the Encore Azalea as well are bringing us this Better Boxwood. And there are four new varieties this year. They are planning to have more. They're from Europe. It's a collection that comes out of Europe that has been proven to be, because they got blight before we did in Europe. And so they've been fighting this now for two decades. Mm-hmm. And so there are some different varieties that grow in different ways, just like all the beautiful boxwoods we have here. You know, some more tall, like skylight varieties, more of the ones that grow shorter and be better pruned in the globe, different kind of pruning varieties. So it's really, though, exciting to see. Look, that boxwood is not going to set anyone's, you know, pants on fire in the garden, but as a foundation shrub, especially for those of us up north where it gets really cold, it's nice to have something that's evergreen year round and for people who are kind of afraid to buy something else. So it's nice to have one of those plants that is, you know, now is going to be disease resistant.
Yeah. And it's, you know, blight resistance. I'm sure if we had, the way it got crazy down here was in the summer of 2017, we had a extra 30 inches of rain. And that's how it got like on wildfire. And I was running my business then. I had clients call me up and say, don't come to my yard. I'm like, I kind of know how not to spread this, but whatever. I lost a couple clients that way. But we were extremely careful and had to douse ourselves and our tools with Clorox and blah, blah, blah. It's so nice that it's much more under control with these plants. And also scientists understand it better. It was sort of like COVID at the beginning, like, this is so terrible. We're all going to die. And, you know, it actually, a plant can recover from the blight. Just if you got it bad, it won't. So you got to rip them out. This is a cute little thing, and it's 3 to 4 feet high and 2 to 3 feet wide when mature. So a really nice shape, bright green color in the, it's, you know, it's not one of those darker green ones in the photograph. Do you happen to know how fast it grows?
So they are not super fast, which is why it's taken so long to bring them to market. They're, I would say, generally
not as slow as the English boxwood, though.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Average. All right. So this is called Heritage Better Boxwood, and it's a cute little thing. We need those boxwoods. I love boxwoods in the garden. All right. Let's go to veg, which I never grow, but I like to eat. We've got a tomato.
Yeah. You don't grow edibles?
Rarely. I inherited a couple blueberries on this property, and every once in a while, I'm like, "Are you kidding?" Tomatoes taste so much better if you grow them. So I'll get one or two. And I definitely, we were just talking about herbs. I have great plans for herbs to make myself a slightly better cook. But no, I'm kind of thinking that's what farmers markets are for. I'm pretty terrible about veg. Yeah.
Oh, I hear you. I mean, that's kind of me. And I'm going to say it. I'm just going to say it. Seed starting. It's like I've done it. It's fun to do with the kids. It's an activity. But the starts that I buy at the store are just always so much further ahead of mine. It's so much bigger.
I know. I still think it's a valuable pursuit. I am very lazy about that also. I've done very little of it in my time. But I think it's a wonderful pursuit to get exactly what you want if you're willing to put a little time in.
Different varieties. I've saved seeds this year of my French radishes. So we'll see how they do. But I try every year. But I hear you. I hear you about. I love my local purveyors too. But cherry tomato. So if you do, like you said, something about the farmer's market tomato, sure. But there is nothing like going out to your own garden and picking just a few to pop in your mouth, cherry tomatoes or cute little mini cucumbers, whatever they may be. Uh-huh. And so Parkseed who develops new varieties each year, has a collection called the Whopper. And the Whopper name means that you get a whole bunch of them. Like, it's a Whopper. So not necessarily related to size, which I think Burger King might like you to think. So the Whopper. They have the cherry tomato, and it's Park's Junior Whopper. And it's a little tomato that has like 1/2 ounce round, deep red fruits that taste like a beefsteak. So big flavor, loads and loads of tomatoes on the plant. You get a lot of cherry tomatoes on most plants, but really, really good flavor and crack resistant skin. So it's important, especially if you know and have grown tomatoes. There's some tricks to keep the skin from cracking, right? Consistent watering, but it also helps to have that bread into the plant as well.
Tell me about this. When I think of cherry tomatoes, I think of a slightly sweet taste on some of them. But this is more robust, more beefsteaky, and not as sweet. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yep. So it's going to have that maybe tangy, or I'm trying to like picture my summer BLT sandwich. But yes, a little bit more tangy in that beefsteak flavor. Correct.
Okay. I like it. And looking at the photograph, it's hard to tell how you said each of them is about loads of 1/2 ounce round. That's hard for me to visualize, even though I'm staring at it. Is it kind of just a normal cherry tomato size, slightly bigger, slightly smaller, grape, ping pong ball? I don't know. Can you tell?
Yeah. So it is, I'd say like a quarter.
Like a quarter. Okay. I got that. Yeah.
Think of a grape, I think more of like a grape tomato, right? That's going to be a little more elongated. So, right. But it's about that size, but these are more rounded. So I think, yeah, you can picture a quarter.
I can picture a quarter, even though I haven't had one in my pocket for quite a while. Yeah, I can picture that. All right, good. So Junior Whopper Red, nothing to do with Burger King. Okay. We got another rose. You're rose heavy. You're rose heavy on this list, but I love it. Got another rose. It's a climber, Big Ben climbing rose. Tell us.
You're right. We are rose heavy. I think partly because the new knockouts, but then also because Jackson and Perkins has just unveiled this new collection this year. It's brand new. This is the first year that they're doing this, both the Vault collection, the exclusive roses, and then roses from around the world was that third kind of different varieties. And they're going to be coming out with new ones each year now. But climbing roses are kind of problem solvers, I think, in a way, because I think of them as maybe different than, of course, over an arbor, alongside a fence, pop them in a trellis. Big Ben, you can grow in a container. Super cool. All that is great. But have you thought about growing roses as a ground cover, like climbing roses as a ground cover? So I think that's the neat thing that Big Ben can do is grow both up, but also out, and create this like dense carpet of flowers. We have ground cover roses, but they're different. The rose looks a little bit more like a knockout. It doesn't have that floribunda look like Big Ben.
Wow, that's an interesting idea. Sort of like a pumpkin spreading out there on the mulch, yeah, or the lawn or whatever.
Exactly. Absolutely. And it's something, a different way to look at them. But again, this is disease resistant. So we are looking for that in our flowers. You can cut them, but it's just a different way to think of climbing roses.
Cool.
10 feet, you get coverage of a ground cover, which, you know, it takes a lot of ground cover, like little plugs or plants to fill in that space. And I would rather grow these beautiful kind of yellow cream, like a very pale yellow rose, than weeds.
It's a beautiful color. It really is a nice, it's really creamy yellowy, not bright gold or anything like that. And I can see how it would complement my fairly ugly orangey brick wall that I might want to cover up. So this is giving me lots of good ideas. The one in front, listeners, the one in back is concrete. The one in front, yeah, that could help. Big Ben climbing rose. And that zones 5 through 9. All right. So then we have a lavender that looks like a buddleia. What's going on here?
This is called butterfly candy.
Oh, wait. I'm looking at little lavender.
Huh. Yep. Little lavender. Butterfly candy is the variety name. So little lavender is a butterfly bush. And I want everyone to know, if you're listening, it is sterile. That's the first thing we should say.
Oh.
Yes. So I know that there are questions about butterfly bushes in the garden, and making sure that everyone knows that. That's the most important thing. Do not buy non-sterile butterfly bushes.
Yep. And if you're growing one, if you could substitute with something like this, it's beautiful. So zones 5 through 10, is it going to be pretty tall? Let's see. Tell us about it more.
No, these are like little miniature, great for container gardening. We were talking earlier about how lots of customers do want something in a container. And so these only grow about like 2 to 3 feet tall and wide. And they work in zones 4 to 11. And so I know all you zone 4s out there, you know, there are not a ton of really densely flowering shrubs that will overwinter. So I think that's a great thing to call out too. But 4 to 11, I mean, that's a really wide range for a plant.
And it's a gorgeous sort of medium color, 2 to 3 feet tall. And the fact that it's sterile, because that does throw a lot of people off for the butterfly bush. They're weedy plants. So this is fantastic. It's called Little Lavender, which threw me. And then wait, so tell me this, Katie, is Little Lavender the name of the plant, or wait, what's Butterfly
Little
Candy?
Little Lavender is the variety name and the company name is Butterfly Candy.
Got it. All right. So they're heavily into pollinators. That's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, I think for the research that's been done on butterfly bushes about what they're like for pollinators, I think your listeners love native plants. For me, these are the things that are, I have so many different kinds of plants in my garden. I have an entirely native pollinator, you know, native to my zone here in Pennsylvania, pollinator garden. This attracts the butterflies to my garden like no other plant. So they come for this, they get a snack, and then they go and they get dense nutrition from some of my other plants. So as far as attracting butterflies, you really can't go wrong with the buddleia.
Yeah, if you build it, they will come.
Yes.
And did you hear that McDonald's is incorporating Krispy Kreme donuts into their menu? Which is, I'm sure that the Little Lavender buddleia is much more nutritious for pollinators than Krispy Kremes are for us. But still, I'm just saying, there's an attraction.
Exactly. There is an attraction. It's probably not the most caloric thing on their menu, though.
They're probably not. The most intense concentration of calories, possibly, and fat. Yeah. So excited about that. All right, so I'm gonna go out of order because I want to end up on these two really colorful ones. But I love the way this nice and easy yucca looks. It almost looks like a carex to me at a glance. It's not pointy. It's not harsh looking. I think it does grow 5 feet tall and wide. So we're not talking about a small plant. But in the photograph, I'm like, oh, okay, is that the Carex morawi or what have they done with the Carex? Wait, that's a yucca? So tell us more about that.
Yep, great point. And the leaves are a little thicker and they're variegated, but they don't have that kind of frilly look too when the yucca kind of starts to peel. And it's a little bit more draping form.
Yes.
Yeah. Right, too. So it looks different in your garden. It's not going to be that upright habit as much. This new yucca from the Southern Living Plant Collection is the cream variegation, kind of like that autumn moonstruck we were talking about earlier. It is stable variegation. You may have bought a yucca before that claims to be variegated and then it reverts. So this one does have stable cream variegation and then in some of its colder temperatures. So this is a plant maybe good for your new zone, but it only works in 8A to 11B. So it's a little bit more of a warm season perennial for the rest of us. We could grow it as an annual if we wanted to. And in some of the colder temperatures, like maybe in your zone, it would get a pink hue in those colder temperatures.
Ooh.
The cream turns a slight pink.
And it wants to bake in the sun. This could be great for my hillside. I'm sorry for the people who don't live in zones 8 through 11, but it's a pretty cool looking plant. And like you said, maybe people could grow it as an annual. So this is the nice and easy yucca. It's very different than any other yucca I've ever seen. And by the way, listeners, you know, yucca is a native plant, which is always a bonus.
Bonus.
Yay. It would be interesting to see, you know, the really pointy look of a yucca, and then you can see those flowers coming up. But this, it just will, I don't know, it will look completely different because of the bendy, foldy leaves on this with a flower coming up. You know, a really unique look. I swear I'm going to spend some money on this list. All right. Let's go to Monarda. I love Monarda, but Monarda can be floppy. Guess what? This one grows to 12 inches tall. It's called Monarda Balmy Lilac Bee Balm. That's a lot of words. Yeah. It sounds like pollinators like it, right?
They love it. And you know, Monarda, I don't know why we repeat Monarda and Bee Balm, but this is from the Balmy series. If anyone has grown them before, they have other colors. So the lilac is the brand new color for the season. And the Balmy series is really known for its mildew resistance. So you've probably grown Monarda before. I've grown Monarda before. And lo and behold, they're midsummer. They're covered in mildew. So this one has mildew resistance. They're also tiny, so they only get to be like a foot tall. So great Monarda that's, like you said, doesn't flop over. Perfect for the front of the border, even in containers, zones 4 through 9. And I love the idea that now too, like if you wanted to create just a little bit more of color variation, you can do the purple, the pink, the lilac, and I think they have a cream as well.
Oh, nice. The Balmy series. So that's Monarda, Balmy, Lilac, Bee, Balm. Yes, a little bit repetitive there, but that's okay. It's a beautiful looking plant. All right. And lastly, we have the Superbissima. Can't be better than that. Superbissima wine red petunia, which doesn't really even look like a plant. It looks like, I don't know, it's a painting.
I was going to say, or like a weird fish.
Yeah.
Underwater fish.
Yeah, it's crazy looking.
It is interesting. And this is an award-winning petunia. So it's going to be, as you know, your listeners know, clearly an annual, but just bloom its head off. And the reason that it is has won awards is for its non-stop blooming. The flowers are also huge. They can reach 6 inches.
Wow.
And they're really ruffled. So for listeners, we're trying to paint this picture, like the center, maybe like you're looking up at the night. I mean, the center, it doesn't look like those night, starry night petunias at all, but it's like a deep purple, dark center. And then the edges around it are where I'm getting more of like a fish, you know, fin, kind of very fluid, ruffled, magenta edge.
It's so crazy looking that when I first glanced, okay, I'm like, okay, that's a petunia. And they put it in a bowl of radicchio. It's sitting around, like it's just sitting in something else. And then you realize, oh no, that's part of that petal. It's so it goes from that really deep, you know, maroon purple color to this fuchsia, all on the same piece of material. It's just so weird.
Yeah, it's so weird. And I love it because, you know, I don't know how many annuals you grow, but especially with a new garden, you know, you kind of just want to fill in the beds. At least how that's how I feel. Like, I just don't want to keep mulching. If I have new beds, I fill them with annuals until my perennials have done their thing and grown enough to the stage where they can take over the show. Of course, pots, containers, I still do some annuals. So I think, like, if you're going to get them to be different and weird and unique like this one.
Yeah. Oh, it would look fantastic with a lime green or a dusty blue color. Oh, man, it is funky. All right. Superbissima wine red petunia. I might have to write a blog just to throw a photograph of that out there because it is so unique looking. So we finished the list. It's a fantastic list. And yeah, listener, I think I might just have to write a blog post because there's so many good images on this. And I'll make sure that I put it up on Instagram too. When I talk about this, you know, wonderful conversation with Katie, but let's talk about that trend that you just mentioned. It's not a plant, but just a trend of foraging. And I always get a little fearful with that foraging. I'm like, again, this is what farmers markets are for. I don't know what kind of mushroom that is. I'm not taking that chance. But this trend that you're talking about has nothing to do with putting things in your mouth, does it?
No. And that's what's so interesting. When I talk about foraging as a trend, it's like, well, part of my brain says, this is not new. This is not new. And then I think, yeah, but people think of foraging as for food. And so we're really trying to encourage people to think of their yard and their garden and maybe along the highway when you're driving down the street as getting things for arrangements. Because you and I both know, and all your listeners know, about the joy that flowers bring us, that gardening brings us. And I think that the percentage of people that actually cut from their garden and bring it inside is pretty low. A lot of people, especially beginner gardeners, are so afraid and they're so amazed they could even grow something outside. God forbid they cut something off of it, they think they're going to kill it. So, we talked all about pruning, you know? And so we really see a big trend this year of people where people are talking about cut flower gardening. They're doing it more often. And there's a new company called Oasis Forage Products. And so they are working with professional floral designers to help inspire, give people really just the confidence. Like, here is a couple of tricks on how you put together your arrangements and you can create those Pinterest-worthy designs in your house too. Because inevitably, it happens in my house. I cut the flowers, I bring them inside, put them in a container, and it's Pinterest versus reality. Like my container thing, you know, I want it to bring me joy. And so I think that's what we're going to see more of this spring. And then next spring, is people really just going out into their garden to be and getting inspired. And one of their tips is to start with a big center, like what is your focal plant? And so maybe it's kind of similar to designing a garden. You know, you start with your either a flowering tree or when you're doing a new bed, where do you start? It's a foundational plant. You're not going to put your border plants in first. So it's similar with floral design is what is your center stem or your big statement flower? They have lots of other tips. I am still a baby designer, but and then you work your way around it. So we're really excited to see the kinds of arrangements people can design this year.
Wonderful. So it's not foraging for things that might make you have tummy upsets. It's foraging for things beautiful. But you know, don't forget everybody that when comparison is the thief of joy. So if you make something pretty for yourself, just don't be thinking about what other people are doing. Just, you know, jam those things into a jar and sniff them and smell them and look at them and don't worry about it. But it's great to have some direction also.
Yeah. You're so right. And it's like, I fall victim to that too. And so that is a great reminder. Thank you.
You're welcome. Katie, what a pleasure it was to talk to you. I'm so excited about all these new plants and with the new garden with some, you know, space to just tiny little spaces to grow better, better things. I don't know. I think I might have to take advantage of some of these. So thanks for sharing with us.
It was so fun. A great conversation. And you are lucky to have a new garden, right? I mean, it's a fun, clean slate.
Yeah, clean slate, except for some periwinkle that we're getting rid of, et cetera, et cetera. All right. Well, thanks. And I'll be right back in a few minutes to talk about what might be going on in your garden right now.
Hello again. Nothing like hearing about fabulous new plants to get you all excited about the planting season. I love chatting with Katie. She has some real enthusiasm about all of this stuff and lots of knowledge, too, because of the various clients that their company represents. So her mom, I can't remember if we said this in the interview, her mom, Susie McCoy, was the founder of the Garden Media Group, and Katie carries on the tradition extremely well. And if you're still a little bit fuzzy on what the Garden Media Group does, well, in a nutshell, Katie said, they make plants popular. And I feel like they're doing a pretty good job, considering that that list that we just went over might have a real impact on my wallet this spring. Now, where do you get these plants? Well, just in case I don't do a blog post, knockout roses you can get, well, you can get them anywhere. I mean, big box stores or whatever. But the other roses were from Jackson and Perkins, and they have a website, and they also have some pretty healthy price tags. But they do let you sign up for an email and get 20% off, so I might go for that. But I did get permission to put the one sheet about all those dozen plants on my blog. I mean, I can't be that lazy, right? Just go to my blog and have a look. I will take 15 minutes and write you all a little blog post about those fabulous plants. Now, speaking of getting excited about spring, I wanted to make sure that all my local listeners, that might be local to Albemarle County, that might be local to Virginia, that might be local to the East Coast, but I hope that you are tracking that the amazing Historic Garden Week put on by the Garden Club of Virginia is coming up very soon. Now, the general dates, and you know, it happens all over the state in various cities on various days, but the dates of the entire event are April 20th through 27th. And you can get yourself a ticket if you go to vagardenweek.org. On April 21st, I'm going to be hanging out at an amazing place called Waterbury Farm. It's in Free Union, Virginia, and a couple of other ladies and I are the head hostesses there, so I'm going to be there all day if you want to say hello. But saying hello to me would actually not be the attraction here. This place is amazing. It's a private garden, but it's not just a garden. It's extensive, and it has just, I mean, it has water features, including a reflecting pool, a gurgling brook, a pond, this smooth, round kind of reflecting fountain thing that I am not describing very well, but just trust me, it is a thing of beauty, which they say is a joy forever. The owner has a greenhouse and their fabulous woodland walks, conifer collection, amazing sculptures, including bunnies. There's garden furniture made by McKinnon and Harris, which always makes me drool. There's a pollinator bed, the long borders, a rose garden, an azalea garden. And that should be pretty much on point by April 21st, I would think. So go to this website. Are you ready? Again, it was vagardenweek.org. and get yourself a ticket. A ticket to Albemarle would not only get you into the Water Prairie Farm, but two other fabulous gardens, one of which I've also seen. I have kind of a funny story about that one. About a year ago, about this time, the owner of that garden, the second one, and if you're looking at the guidebook wondering which one is which, so I'll be at Water Prairie Farm, and this is the private garden that's on Chapel Spring Road. Well, she calls me up, and she asked me to come out to do a consultation about a year ago now, because she had said yes to having her garden on the Historic Garden Week tour for 2024, and she was a little panicked. So I get there, and this place is amazing. I mean, it's not quite as big as Water Prairie Farm, but it has everything the personal gardener would want to have. She has a greenhouse herself. The propagation, I mean, she has cutting, she has veg, she has woodland, she has, I mean, topiary. And she does a lot of it herself. So my two takeaways from this consultation were that, one, when she asked me what she needed to do to get ready to host people in her garden a year from now, my answer was, well, okay, so I think there are a couple of weeds in the driveway and maybe you pull those, but other than that, you're good to go. And the other thing that I took away from that consultation, and I'm driving back and I'm like, I'm suffering here. I have a little bit of imposter syndrome. Like, am I really a gardener compared to this lady? And by the way, I was gardening in my big garden back then, but with the veg and the bulbs and the propagation and it was amazing. And the house is beautiful too. And she was so knowledgeable and hands-on. And like me, she has like this passel of grandchildren. And I might be inflating this, but she might even still work. Well, suffice it to say that I came out not feeling as good about my own self. But I got over it. I'm fine now. I remember that comparison is the thief of joy. Thank you, Marianne Wilburn. But there is no getting around the fact that this is a fabulous garden, and so is Water Prairie. And I'm sure the third one, which I don't know much about, is great too. So buy your ticket for any Historic Garden weekday from April 20th to 27th that you can. But April 21st in the Free Union of Albemarle County is going to be quite, quite, quite special. The gardens are open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and that's a Sunday, April 21st. And one more time, that website is vagardenweek.org. I heard from a listener named Mary Beth Martin who informed me, and I want to thank her for this, that keystone species is just not a new idea. I kind of thought, and although I'm sure he didn't take credit for it because he's just not that kind of guy, I kind of thought that Doug Tallamy, the entomologist from the University of Delaware, had coined that phrase, and that it was sort of under the auspices of the homegrown national park movement. I was wrong. Oh, by the way, if you're not familiar with the work of Doug Tallamy, then you should probably stop listening to me immediately and just start listening to him. I mean, download any of his books on Audible, but get to it right away. But I digress. So Mary Beth Martin sent me a link to an article about keystone species, and it was put out by the National Geographic Society. And when I followed the link, I realized that the article was aimed, joy, at school children, grades 5 through 8. And that gave me great confidence that I might be able to absorb the information because I am no science whiz. So reading from the article, I mean, it's just such nice plain language. Don't you wish we all were still in 8th grade or 5th grade? I'm reading from the article, every ecosystem has certain species that are critical to the survival of other species in the system. The keystone species could be a huge predator or an unassuming plant, but without them, the ecosystem may not survive. Since a keystone species is not a formal designation, scientists may debate which plants or animals in a particular ecosystem deserve the title. Some wildlife scientists say the concept oversimplifies one animal or one plant's role in a complex food web or habitat web. On the other hand, calling a particular plant or animal in an ecosystem a keystone species is a way to help the public understand just how important one species can be to the survival of many others. So that's not bad, right? It goes on to say, in many cases, the vital role of a keystone species in an ecosystem is not fully appreciated until that species is gone. Oh, sad. Ecologist Robert Payne, who coined the term keystone species in the 1960s, observed the importance of such species in a study of starfish along the rocky Pacific coastline in Washington state. The starfish fed on mussels, which kept the mussel population in check and allowed many other species to thrive. When the starfish were removed from the area as part of an experiment, the mussel population swelled and crowded out lots of other species. So the biodiversity of the ecosystem was drastically reduced. So, and now I'm talking myself, but I loved how simple that article was. I got it. So keystone refers to plants or animals that are so essential to an ecosystem that once removed, the system collapses. We probably couldn't live, for example, without oak trees in the United States because that would so drastically reduce the number of insects who depend on them, and we can't possibly live without insects. Anyway, it was a great article, and I really appreciate the information, Mary Beth. I also heard from my friend Liz Hayes, who gardens up in Arlington, Virginia. We met a couple years ago over some very floppy, very large, very leggy camellias that were driving her crazy a few years ago. And I gave her the confidence to get out the saw and give them a real drastic rejuvenation pruning. And they filled in so beautifully, and she had a great set of blooms this year, and she shared with me with photographs. Thanks, Liz. I appreciate it. It's good to see. And what's going on in my garden this week? Well, I concentrated work on my very steep hillside that's above the retaining wall, therefore above the bowling alley. This is the part of the yard that I didn't actually know was ours until I lived here several months. I did my own rejuvenation pruning to a couple of my oversized camellias that were hiding cute little trees that seemed to be something good. I don't know, TBD. But those camellias are now 3 foot tall sticks. I don't doubt that they'll come back just like Liz's did. Don't be scared. If a plant is in the wrong place and you think it would look better, smaller, or gone, well, just prune it, because if you kill it, then it's gone. And if you don't kill it, then it's smaller. So win-win. Anyway, I'm never afraid to prune if something's not pleasing me where it is. I also filled in that hillside with a bunch of tiny, teeny, tiny little seedlings of hellebores. This will be a good experiment. So if you grow hellebores and you let them go to seed, you know that you get tons and tons of seedlings from these guys. But they take a long time to mature. And the ones that are just growing right next to each other, like in the same square centimeter, I swear it's like 5 to a square centimeter of soil, they might never mature because the competition is too stiff. So last week, when I knew that we were going to get some rain over the next 4 days, because even though I have a tiny garden, I don't like to be a slave to my hose. So I chose the day before these days of rain, and I took all these little teeny tiny seedlings that were about an inch tall, and I just, you know, soil knife, stabbed the ground, pressed them into some blank spaces on that hillside. And if I was successful, I hope to get a good show in future years to be able to cover up the soil that's in between what mostly grows up there, because that is mostly shrubs and they are sticks at this time of year. not so attractive. And we can really see them quite easily from our living room windows, where we hang out losing brain cells while we watch television. We're so into suits right now. Anyway, I planted some Vernonia or ironweed because I want some flowers dringling down in the fall, like kind of flopping over the shrubs. And I also planted 3 Andropogon blackhawks. So this is a big blue stem. It's a native grass that has really cool, dark purple, black kind of foliage. And I have mentioned this plant before on this podcast because I have been quite unsuccessful in growing it. I bought some and I was growing them in my garden, you know, in my last garden over by the university. When I was talking to Richard Hawkey, he was a guest about a year ago, talking about the Chicago Botanic Gardens where he works and the trial gardens that they run there. And he was really recommending that particular one. But I questioned that because I'm like, well, I'm not seeing anything great here. And he just assumed from my description of what I was growing that what I bought was not blackhawks, because he said, no, this is so good. It's so big. It's so black. It's so easy to grow. And I think you've got the wrong plant. So fingers crossed that this works, because I think that the dark foliage of this grass would be an excellent foil to the other things that grow up there, a lot of which are Calycarpa. So, you know, that's that cool, tiny little purple berry. And I also planted 3 bluish gray junipers, sort of aiming them to be exclamation points on the hillside, like the Italian garden that Marianne Wilburn sort of thought about when she was giving ideas on how to make this area look good. I did not buy Taylor juniper, but instead Skyrocket, which should stay pretty skinny and get to about 20 feet tall. And I think that that color, either from either juniper, but that blue-gray color would really complement the dark purple of the Blackhawk's Andropogon. So we shall see. I have in my little plant room under lights a small smattering of seeds coming along, mostly things that I plan to grow from the top of the concrete retaining wall and sort of soften the concrete as they sort of dringle over it this summer. And my favorites that I like to grow together are Morning Glory, Moonflower Vine, and the Hyacinth Bean Vine. I think they look fabulous together and they're so easy to grow. And a packet of seeds, it's like, you know, Jack of the Beanstalk, you push the seeds into the ground, but I am bringing them indoors because they're easy to germinate indoors too. And I'll harden them off and plant them on that wall. And a packet of seeds, it just doesn't cost very much. And perhaps I'll spend my extra money on some new roses, which are a bit pricier. So what could you be doing in your garden right now? Let's just think about that. How could you be playing outside? Well, here's the playlist. You could deadhead your spring flowering bulb so that they put all of their energy into their roots and not into producing seeds. And if you grew some blind daffodils this spring, blind daffodils are the type that didn't flower. So what good are they? Well, consider the following. Are your blind daffodils growing in too much shade? Are they old patches that are extremely crowded with lots of foliage and no flowers? So if it's the first case, you could dig up the bulbs and move them to a sunny spot. And if it's the second case, you could dig up the bulbs and separate them so that they get a little bit more space. When you wield your shovel digging up daffodils, go low. Go as low as you can go. I mean, 6, 7, 8 inches, because there's nothing more disheartening than sticking your spade in the ground and coming up with, daffodil foliage, which has been separated from the bulbs that you were trying to, I mean, if the foliage has gone brown, then there's no big deal. You can still give it a try, because if it's no longer feeding the bulb, then you could be okay. It's a really great time to increase some of your bulb populations that love to be divided. And you can wait until that foliage withers away, but it's kind of easier to see and easier to deal with when it's still green foliage. So I'm thinking about little tiny crocuses and snowdrops. That foliage, the foliage on those two, I mean, I can never find it later. I want to divide those in the green. My technique is usually to dig up a clump and then put a third of those bulbs right back into that hole and then take 2/3 and make 2 other little clumps to, you know, populate the neighborhood. But it is that sad time of year when you're sort of looking at foliage that you can't take away yet because, you know, that green chlorophyll stuff, it's going to feed those bulbs for other flowers next year. Now, if it's tulips and that foliage is making you sad, you might want to consider treating them like an annual and therefore just pulling them up or just, you know, snipping them off at ground level. But tulips do tend to come back at least a little bit, so you might want to leave them. I tend to get about a 40% return on the second season of tulips and then the smattering next year that surprises the heck out of you, especially if you've changed color schemes in the meantime. But it's always a pleasant surprise because I certainly don't count on it. So no matter what your spring flowering bulbs are, just remember that bendy brownish foliage has finished with the photosynthesizing thing. And as soon as it starts to look, you know, really floppy and brown, you can take it away. You can take it away or you can just leave it there. But it has done its job in terms of feeding the roots of that bulb. And of course, it's a great time to increase your perennial population because you can probably see the tops of many of those poking up and you might be thinking smugly, my, that's a healthy looking patch of name your favorite perennial. And then you're thinking, but that could be 3 of my favorite perennials. And at that point, you go grab a shovel. So you tip the whole thing out of the ground and you pogo stick your shovel onto half of it or a third of it. And presto, new plants for free. I basically do the same thing with perennials that I do with bulbs that I want to spread around. If I like where it was before, I put a third of it back in the same hole. And I plant 2 other ones nearby or maybe someplace else. But it's nice to see a really good population of plants. A bigger bunch of the same perennial tends to look better on the eye. What I must try to do in this new garden is avoid this spotty dotty look of like one of these and one of those. But it's going to be hard for me in this first couple of years because I have my favorite plants that I brought from my other garden. And I have some other ones that I've purchased that I just don't ever want to not grow. So it's going to take some experience and thoughtfulness and just being a wise gardener to have big enough clumps so that it looks cohesive and not like, you know, some shelf in the nursery where they have one of each type of plant, because that's just not a great look. but it can't be instant for me. I'm just going to have to be patient. This is the time of the year when gardeners like to mulch, and it does give a great finished look to your bed if you invest in some of that, you know, beautiful double shredded hardwood bark. I had a client who used pine fines, which was the most expensive, the most luxurious. It was like, that was like our favorite mulching job. And I think Abby still does it. The young lady that I sold my business to, it's like mulching with, you know, chocolate cake. It's just, it's so lovely, but it's expensive. And so is the double shredded hardwood bark. And it's a little bit of a waste to mulch every inch of your yard. So please don't let your landscapers remove leaves and then put hardwood bark back on the soil. Like don't bother with that. It's just such a waste of time and energy. If you like the look of hardwood bark, and I do, but I'm trying to get a more rustic look in my garden, we'll put it, or have them put it, over the leaves. And then you get twice as much mulch, and half of it was free. Don't forget that no mulch should be piled up around the base of a woody plant, a tree, or a woody shrub, because that's a good area for them to breathe. They need to have a little air down there. And it's possible, by the way, it's certainly not the look that all gardeners want, but it's possible you might begin to enjoy simply leaving the leaves and watch your growing population of perennials and shrubs grow together so that by like April or May, you hardly notice the leaves at all. Another way not to mulch as much, and like I said, there's nothing wrong with mulching and it's your garden, but you could save some time and energy and money if you were to consider a bed finished and looking good for spring, if it were neatly edged and mulched with whatever product you like to use, but only mulched for the first foot or two, and then the leaves sort of were back in the middle of the bed. That could look incredibly tidy, and yet you haven't spent nearly as much time, money, or energy, and nobody can really see the middle of your bed, especially if you've got a good, thick population of plants. Hey, it's just an idea. Like I said, it's your garden. Oh, and one other thing that you could be doing right now is if you have hellebore flowers and they're frustrating you because they don't stay in an arrangement as long as some other stems do, don't forget that you can cut the flowers off and just give them a tiny, tiny bit of a stem, like, you know, a centimeter, and float them in water. And they look magical. Floral arrangement is a skill indifferently applied by me, and that's actually generous. But honestly, I can't go wrong with floating a bunch of different colored hellebore blooms in a pretty bowl, and neither can you. So you can go do that just as soon as you finish listening to this podcast, which is over, I think. Yeah, I think I've said enough here. I'd like to thank my friend Rusty Gear, the American musician and songwriter, because he supplied the music to this podcast. And you can find him on Spotify, Rusty Gear. He's awesome. I'd also like to thank you for listening. And if you want to get in touch with me, you could use my website, lhgardens.com, or you could chat me up on Instagram. And there I am, Leslie Harris, LH. I hope you have a fabulous gardening day wherever you are. I name this podcast Into the Garden with Leslie because I am into my tiny, fun, new little garden, and I hope you are into your plot wherever you are. Until next time.